This is Urban Agriculture, episode number 16, Vertical Harvest.
Urban Agriculture, episode number 16, recorded on May 18th, 2015. Hey, everybody. I'm Vincent Racaniello, and with me is Dixon Despommier.
Hello, Vincent.
What's on the plate today, Dixon?
Well, Vince, we're going to go out west. You know, like I could do a great Gabby Hayes right now. I wish I could do one.
Go west, young man?
No, that was Horace Greeley that said that one.
What's out west?
Well, it's our interviewers for the day. We're going to interview people in Jackson, Wyoming.
What's there?
Well, there's a very lovely community called Jackson, Wyoming, which is right next to the entry to Yellowstone National Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's also to the entry to the Tetons National Park. And it's very strategically located next to the Snake River and Jenny Lake, and all kinds of wonderful aquatic activities can occur within a stone's throw of Jackson. So people who enjoy the summer sports flock to that region. But, of course, when the water freezes and it turns into snow and ice, there's a winter wonderland that's created out there. And a lot of skiers and downhill skiers and cross-country skiers and bobsledders and all kinds of people. People even take their snowmobiles into the Yellowstone Park to see what it's like in the winter. It's quite an interesting place altogether. They're going to build a vertical farm.
Why would they build one in the middle of nowhere?
Well, that's not exactly in the middle of nowhere.
Well, Jackson's a small town, right?
It's a small town, but it's a crossroads for a lot of people. It's not too far from a lot of...
Does it make sense? I thought this was all about urban agriculture.
This is an urban place. Trust me, it has a fairly decent population. I think it's up around 30 or 35,000 people that live there.
Are they going to... Well, I guess we'll find out, but...
We are going to find
out. Are they going to ship it long distances or keep it local?
No. They've got lots of high-end restaurants in this town.
So right now, we should wait to hear from them, but I presume...
Yeah, we should.
Right now, they have to import all their produce.
That's exactly right.
They don't grow anything locally? Let's ask them.
I think we should ask them.
All right,
of course.
Let me call them up.
Hello?
Oh, yay! Hip, hip, hooray!
Hi there.
Howdy.
Howdy. Well, I'm glad this worked out for lack of real scheduling.
Yeah, well, exactly.
That's the New York style.
Yeah.
I think it's much more Wyoming style than New York.
It's a joke.
New York Wyoming is the best, like, you know, combined style that you could have. So
there you go.
So I presume this is Jenny, right?
Penny.
Oh, Penny.
Penny and Nona.
Jenny is a lake.
We're both here.
You're both there?
Nice.
Yep.
All right. I'm Vincent, and you know Dixon, right?
It's probably going to be hard to tell the difference between our voices, though.
Joined at the hips?
Pretty much, yep.
Wait, let me see. I haven't heard Nona yet. Speak a little.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have.
Oh, Vincent, that's why they were right.
I know.
Are you sitting next to each other?
We are.
Okay. Nice.
All right. Well,
should I say hello to Saul for you?
Please do.
Okay. Hey, Saul.
This is
Noah. He's in the next room, actually.
Yeah. Oh, is he really?
Yeah, we might get him to come over and say a few words maybe later on.
I was just thinking about him. I was wondering how he's doing.
He said this morning he's in pain and bored.
Oh. Right. Tell him he needs to come to Jackson.
He does.
Well, I think he's working on it, right?
You bet he is. You bet he is. At least he has a great house to come home to.
Well, Dixon, we've got to get you out there to stay in that house.
Well, you're absolutely right on that one. And I'll bring my fly rod with me, believe me.
All right, let's get this going.
Okay.
We are recording, and the plan is to talk a little bit about how you got to be here and building this vertical harvest, and then we'll ask you some questions about how it works and how in the future and so forth, and that should be it. Okay.
Great.
Yep.
All right.
Take it, Vince.
Actually, we've just recorded the pre-show, so we could start.
We could do that.
All right, Dixon. Our guests are on the line. We're speaking with two of the founders of Vertical Harvest in Jackson, Wyoming. Penny McBride, welcome to Urban Agriculture, Penny.
Thank you for having us.
And Nona Yahia, managing partner. Welcome, Nona.
Oh, that was excellent pronunciation. Thanks.
I was going to ask you if I got it right. It's okay.
You sure did. You sure did.
Well, my last name is Racaniello, and you can imagine how people mess it up. I just tell them black and yellow. And that seems to work. Well, welcome to Urban Agriculture. This is number 16, and today is May 18th, 2015.
Yeah. Right.
And we are moving through the vertical farms, Dixon.
We are. We're identifying all the important activities out there.
Yep. So Vertical Harvest, Jackson, Wyoming, which I know as a place where my coworker Saul Silverstein has a home.
Yes.
I've been hearing about it over the years.
Thanks to Nona, by the way.
And we'll find out how Vertical Farm got built there. I want to ask you both to tell us a little bit about your backgrounds and how you ended up in Jackson doing this. You could start with Penny, perhaps.
Well, my work background, I do environmental consulting of many forms. So I have been living in Jackson for years, mm-hmm. Leaving for little stints for grad school, but this is where my heart lies. So I do consulting work a lot of, primarily right now in, well, besides vertical farming, but I do work for a company that does large-scale compost and mass utilization work.
And you said you went to grad school. What was that in?
I went to grad school at Antioch University in their Master's in Environment and Community program. Mm-hmm.
And where'd you go to college?
I went to, my undergrad program was in Colorado at Colorado State University.
Is that Fort Collins?
That's Fort Collins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I was there for a meeting last summer.
It's a very nice community.
Before it burned down. Because they had some fires out there, as I recall. Really? We're pretty serious.
They did. But it's a great little college town. Yes. Not so little anymore. But.
No,
it's not as party-ish as Boulder.
Well, one of my other podcasts, we have a physician who had a practice in Fort Collins, right?
That's
Dixon?
Right. Yep. And he's in our other podcast called This Week in Parasitism.
Yeah. So he's always talking about Fort Collins. So, Penny, when you were going to college, was it your plan someday to build a vertical farm?
You say yes, Penny. Just say
yes. I'm so ahead of my time. It wasn't. But, you know, I grew up on a farm that my family ran and a ranch. So we were ranchers and farmers. Mm-hmm. So I'm not new to agriculture necessarily. Vertical farming, certainly. But, and new to hydroponics.
Okay. Yeah. So, Nona, I feel as though I know you because I have watched your plans for my colleague's home come to fruition over the years. Every few weeks he would show me photos, starting from sketches to the final product, Dixon as well. Right?
Like his little kids. Here, let me show you how my daughter has grown over
and
the
years. And he's always, I mean, you're the best architect in the world, according to him.
Of course. He's right. Lucky he found me.
So where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from Michigan. Both my husband and I grew up in Michigan. And then after undergraduate school, moved to New York and went to graduate school in New York, place that you're very familiar with, actually.
You went to Columbia?
I did.
How about that?
Yeah, cool.
And, you know, Columbia was such an incredible education because, you know, I can't say that the graduate program really taught me how to build more than it really taught me how to think.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was really interested in becoming an architect that was involved in projects that were truly holistic, that they had some value beyond just the architecture of beyond just the building form. So I think that, like Penny, I didn't know that we would be involved in a vertical farm, but it kind of makes sense thinking about the trajectory. I've always been interested in working. I love working on people's homes, and I think that Saul has been one of our best clients ever, seriously. Probably, if not the best. But, you know, these types of projects, to have opportunities to work on a project such as this is always what why I became an architect, I guess.
Marvelous.
And then the other side of things, I have a brother who has developmental disabilities, and Vertical Harvest, the model that we're setting up has a lot to do with serving the developmentally disabled population in our town. And so that's why this project was also near and dear to my heart.
Terrific.
Is this your first commercial project?
You know, no, we've done smaller commercial projects. It's my first, our first freestanding commercial project. We did a lot of competitions earlier in our work, and we worked in Kazakhstan for a while before.
Oh,
so
wow.
We won three competitions, international competitions out there for office buildings. And we collaborated with an architectural firm called NBBJ. And unfortunately, that was in 2008. And Kazakhstan's economy kind of collapsed right before that trickled through to the United States. And their banks seized up, and the developer that we were working with had about 20 projects that he was building. We had just broken ground. And so he paid for everything that was under construction out of his own pocket, but
wow.
Our projects got tabled and still are tabled, I guess.
I meant to ask you, what part of Michigan are you guys from?
I'm from Detroit.
Okay. Oh, speaking of the need for architecture and public transportation, by the way.
Exactly.
And you might be interested to know they're opening two vertical farms in Detroit over the next 6 months.
You know, I have been paying attention to that. I always think if I wasn't such a hypocrite, I would be living and working.
Don't you dare move an inch.
So can you tell us how Vertical Harvest got started and how the two of you came together to do this?
Sure, I'm going to give that one to Penny.
Well, I had been working on a consulting basis on researching a traditional greenhouse to be heated with biomass. So I had a good understanding of, I was getting a good understanding of the baselines of the workings of a greenhouse in this mountain community. And unfortunately, that all of that work was happening around the time when the economy collapsed, so none of those projects moved forward either. But in the meantime, you know, I had, like I said, kind of gained an education about what was possible. And also around that time, I was working on a public project that a project that had some public visibility. And so a case manager, Caroline Croft, who is a case manager for Citizens with Disabilities, Caroline works with us today still, called me looking for jobs for her clients in some of the projects that I was working on. And, you know, sadly to say, I didn't think that I had employment opportunities for her in the projects that I was working on, but it did spur me to really consider the possibility of starting a greenhouse to help employ citizens with disabilities. And so, you know, it started me down the road of doing some public meetings with possible stakeholders, and really started to kind of pick up interest. And at the time, obviously, the form of the greenhouse was much, much different. But I also realized the need, luckily enough, for a good design for a greenhouse space. And so was introduced to Nona by some friends. And not necessarily as an architect, but as somebody who I might have a lot in common with. And so it was such a great serendipitous meeting, because Nona has an amazing eye for design and you know, a thought form for innovation. And so that was really the start of how we met, and generally how the project kind of gained some roots.
How long ago was this?
That was about 6 years ago. Yeah.
And you know what's interesting is, as Penny said, from the beginning, the project wasn't vertical. When Penny first came to me, it was really, she just said, oh my gosh, you have to see these designs I've gotten. You know, there's no way they would fly here. And that's really how we started talking. And then Penny alerted me that a local politician had shown her the site that Vertical Harvest is getting constructed on now, which is an infill piece of property. So in 2009, was it, Penny? The town built a public parking garage to serve our Center for the Arts, which is in the heart of our downtown of Jackson. And for one reason or another, luckily for us, they left a 30-foot by 150-foot plot of land just open. And, I mean, it was just, other than collecting garbage and growing weeds, it wasn't doing much. So the local town councilman showed that lot to Penny, and, you know, we looked at each other and kind of scratched our heads, and we were like, okay, well, what are our priorities here? And so we really, you know, said that we wanted to grow as much food as possible, really maximize production, and we wanted to provide as many jobs as possible. So I really think that local politician thought that we were going to put a hoop house up there, grow 4 months out of the year and call it a day.
Right.
Right. And I think because of both of our visions to do something different in the community, we said, why not try to go up? And I think what's so interesting about it, I've been thinking about it a while, because we were just asked, Dixon, you are familiar with this process, to do a TED talk. And,
yep.
You know, we're talking about how big ideas happen. And I think it's so interesting that we did mention the collapse of the economy, or the kind of the blip in the economy, because I think if that hadn't happened, this project wouldn't be there. You know, I would have been happily building houses, and Penny would have been working with, you know, the companies that she was consulting for. But, you know, times like those that happened in 2008, 2009 really do breed innovation. And that you have opportunities to work in the community in different ways, and people are open to that. So it's just kind of an interesting point that it came to me.
It's funny you should mention that, because if you look at the activity that's going on now in Japan, for instance, all of that activity began as the result of a tidal wave that was generated by an enormous earthquake, right? And it trashed about 5% of Japan's farmland. They had been working on indoor farming for a long time, but no one paid attention to it because there was no need. And then all of a sudden, there was this huge need.
Right.
And this thing ramped up like overnight. Basically, there are now hundreds of examples of vertical farms throughout Japan. So now what you ought to do is look to California.
Yeah, no, I know.
There's no water, right? There's just no water, period. But there can be enough to allow plants to grow if you grew them the way your guys are going to do that. So you are going to be the poster child for what should be happening next throughout the entire Far West. That's my prediction.
Well, it's funny. I went to see Mad Max yesterday, and they were growing hydroponically.
Indeed. Probably the wrong things, but that's another story.
So you mentioned the desire to provide employment opportunities, right? Is there also a need for growing local produce? I was just talking to Dixon about this before, and do you have to import all of your produce there into Jackson? So is this also a need that satisfies that requirement?
It does. You know, we are fortunate to have some local CSAs that operate in the area, but they, as you can imagine, their growing season is small. There are a few that have greenhouses that help them start the season early, but there's no way that they can meet the demands of our population.
Right.
you know, in the summertime, our population explodes because of the amount of tourists that wander through here on their way to Yellowstone. And so we're happy to that we're going to be kind of bringing more awareness to the benefits of local food production. Mm-hmm. So by no means will we try to replace anything that's grown locally.
How many people do live in Jackson, by the way, just in passing?
20,000 is the local population, and then it balloons to about 3 million by the end of the summer.
That's incredible.
We get 3 million visitors.
That's amazing. Yeah. And they're all going to see you, by the way. Every one of them is going to pay attention to this. They will.
That would be great.
Because they all have to eat, right?
Well, you can't supply all of them, obviously, right?
No, but you'll be supplying the restaurants, and they'll be eating the restaurants. Buy this. Yeah. This salad tastes great. Where did it come from?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the demand for local produce is it's unbelievable.
Right. Right.
And, you know, that's not our problem. The demand is never ending here. It's really how much can we produce. Sure. That is really going to be our challenge. We've pre-sold 95% of what we're going to grow.
Look at that.
To local restaurants, to two grocery stores here, and then 5% we're keeping. We have an on-site retail area.
Oh, nice.
And then also we'll be working with anchor institutions such as the hospital in town to donate to their diabetes program. We're hoping to work with the food cupboard here to donate, you know, fresh produce as well. So we, as everything with Vertical Harvest, we've kind of run the gamut and how we're going to distribute. But we wish we could be bigger. But right in Jackson right now, three stories is as high as you can get. So
right.
We're hoping the next one will be bigger, or that we can build another greenhouse to supplement this elsewhere after we take off.
Sure.
What's the state of construction at this time?
Well, all the underground plumbing has gone in. We're just closing that up right now. And that was pretty interesting to watch from the top floor of the parking garage to see that all that infrastructure go in. But unfortunately for the pedestrian walking by, it doesn't look like much is happening. But the week after Memorial Day, we are getting our steel. And I think one of the challenges, you know, so the whole steel frame will go up. You know, there's been a lot written about this project, and I think one of the issues has been the cost. You know, how is this greenhouse costing so much? And I think what people don't realize is first of all, Jackson is in the highest seismic zone that there is. And so if we had built a hoop house, you know, this would have been an easy thing to pull off. But as soon as we decided to go vertically, our steel structure is really like an office building because of life safety codes. And that was our first challenge. But it's going to be, at the same time, while it was a challenge, it's going to be really exciting to see it go up. But it is, I think I've heard that with other vertical farms, is that that's one of the things that people don't realize is in, you know, to build to our codes here in the United States and elsewhere, Japan hopefully too.
Exactly.
It has to be really structured in a way that's very expensive.
Yep.
I think that's why many of the vertical farms that we've spoken with and for this podcast, they take older buildings and repurpose them.
That's right.
It's agreed, yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Few old buildings in Jackson, though,
yes,
right?
That's very true.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we were in Newark, and there are plenty of old buildings
there.
Yeah,
lots of those.
And other places. Yeah. When is it going to be completed?
We're hoping to occupy right before Christmas. So
outstanding.
And holiday season. And, you know, after that, it'll take us a few weeks to get up and running.
Sure.
But we're really excited to be on schedule.
That's great.
And what's kind of cool is, of course, it's a demonstration project through and through. Of course, we'll be planting our first crops in January in Jackson Hole.
Yeah. Come on.
It's great. It's perfect in a way, right?
I went out to New Buffalo, Michigan to the Green Spirit Farms for their mid-winter harvest festival.
Oh, that's awesome.
The temperature outside was -1 degree.
Oh.
And they were celebrating a harvest.
That gives us comfort and hope.
Good stuff. Oh, absolutely.
What are you going to be growing in Vertical Harvest?
So we'll be growing a couple of different varieties of tomatoes, a mixture of different greens and lettuces, microgreens, and herbs.
Nice.
And a lot of the farms that we've spoken with have little, you know, while their farms, their main farm is being built, they have little laboratories, so to speak, where they get everything working. How are you going to deal with that? Are you going to have to get that done in the main building, like you said, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I mean, we are, I think, one of the more vital people in this project will be our director of production. Mm-hmm. And we'll be bringing someone who obviously has a lot of experience in hydroponic farming as well as commercial scale farming, which is hard because we're not backyard farms. We're not, you know, a huge operation. So we have to find somebody who, you know, is comfortable with this size and Jackson. And also, you know, just that is able to really take this greenhouse on as their own. So that is, we're relying a lot on that person.
Mm-hmm. They have to have a really varied skill set.
You don't have that person yet, I presume, right?
We don't.
We are in a good search for it. So yeah. we're confident that we'll find somebody. It will take.
Yeah, we had a person, but unfortunately this project has taken a little longer than we expected to get off the ground, and that person, rightly so, had to take another job.
Sure. Are you going to invite schools in and people to take tours, or what is your plan for social marketing?
Yes. So, you know, Nona has come up with some genius aspects of design in that our atrium, which will span the three floors of the greenhouse, will allow the visitor to see into each floor of the greenhouse without actually entering the growing space.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
But we will, for educational groups, we do have a dedicated space on the first floor that are simple roller tables that will be able to hopefully have a little interaction there. And then in our atrium, we also have a living wall. So, you know, even there, the visitor will be able to, you know, very close and personally see how the hydroponic system will grow and how the living wall will move. And so we're really excited. And, you know, by design itself, even somebody on the street will be able to really take a peek.
Right.
At most times of the day to see how everything's going inside.
So are you buffalo and elk proof? Most growers worry about white fly and you know fungal infections, but you guys have some special worries, I think.
We might have to hire some wranglers to stand outside, I guess.
There you go. There you go.
So you have three floors. How are they going to be arranged? I presume a lot of it will be growing, but offices will be separate and so forth.
Right. So on the first floor, there is a retail space. So because we are, you know, tight on square footage, the offices and the retail space will be combined. And everything else will be separated. The growing areas are very defined, and you know, our production and propagation areas are very defined. So through the genius of our greenhouse engineer also, Thomas Larson, he's really helped us come up with an amazing design to maximize all the growing space and all of, you know, every inch of the greenhouse.
So your advertising at least says you're going to produce 44,000 pounds of vegetables every year. Is that still a go?
Well, that's the tomatoes alone. So we're hoping
tomatoes alone, that's great.
We're hoping 100,000 pounds of vegetables.
Yes.
And what's cool about it is through the help of Thomas Larson. So basically when Penny and I came together, for 2 years we were kind of struggling through this. We had gotten a grant from the Wyoming Business Council for feasibility, and we'd kind of struggled through this with the help of CASE, which is a program, the Center for Architecture, Science, and Ecology out of New York.
Oh, nice.
And we thought, and through a lot of help with your website, Dixon, to see what this could be. And then 2 years later, we hooked up with Thomas Larson, and what was great was we were really on track, but he helped us really do what Penny was talking about, use every aspect of the greenhouse for growing. So the third floor is dedicated solely to tomatoes, and that's how we are able to produce that many tomatoes. And obviously the tomatoes really need the light from above and from the south, so this is on the south side of a parking structure. And then what adds a fourth floor to our greenhouse are these carousels. So much like the vertical greenhouses in Korea, they're the rotating carousels.
Yeah, in Singapore too.
Yep. Exactly. But the innovation that we're doing is not only do they rotate vertically, but they come all the way in and span the 30-foot width of the second floor. So they bring, so that way they get equal time natural and artificial lighting.
Right.
When the screens are open, and then they bring the hydroponic tubes right to our employees.
Oh, that's
so great. For planting, for harvesting, and then we can just pop them off clean. So essentially, this innovation not only helped us with our energy costs by balancing the artificial and natural lighting, but it really helped us develop how the employees could interact in such a small space with the plant.
Sure.
And then it added a fourth floor. So this was something that's pretty simple, but really had a lot of bang for its buck. So those are being produced right now, and I can't tell you how excited we are to see them.
I'm looking at the picture or the concept drawings, I suppose, on your website. And we have to link our listeners to this because it's really amazing how it's right on the side of the garage, right? I originally thought the whole thing was your your vertical farm, but you have a lot of glass.
Someday
you can see
you
can see the plants through it. So I wanted to ask you, how are you? I guess you're going to balance artificial with natural lighting to do this. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know what's back to kind of what gets me as an architect so excited about this project, it's really an ecosystem, right? So it's not just one thing that's working to protect us from the winters or, you know, from overheating. It's all of the systems working together. So, you know, the first question that everybody asks is, how the heck are you going to be able to, you know, work this in the winter? And Thomas Larson, who Penny mentioned, he's designed and he always reminds us not one of his projects has ever failed. And he's designed projects in Siberia and Greenland with climates worse than our own. But, you know, it's the interaction between a thermal screen that will not only keep the heat in, but the sunlight out when we don't want it. The heating pipes that are all along the southern facade, as well as the roof, that keep the snow off from ever staying on the roof or creating any kind of snow load. Try to convince that one.
Yeah, right.
Something official. But, and, you know, through the heated floors in the greenhouse and the fans and the ventilation. So it's really fascinating how a building can work as a holistic machine to create its own climate. And we'll learn a lot about the building in, you know, in the first 5 years, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the most exciting part.
Is it going to be automated to the sense that if there's a cloudy day, you will have more electrical lighting and vice versa? Is it working to that extent?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
You had a lot of luck with the lighting companies.
In the end?
Yes, in the end.
I'm afraid to say we went with our original proposal.
Really? That's interesting.
But thank you for your help there.
Well, this sounds like insider baseball.
Yeah, no, we're not worried about this. That's okay. As the lighting becomes cheaper and cheaper, eventually this will become a non-issue. But right now, I guess you're right on the edge of it.
Yeah, and you know, I think the work being done in Europe right now, they've just been working on it longer.
That's true. I understand, by the way, from Philips that they're building a demonstration vertical farm on their research campus in Holland.
Oh, really?
So that should be interesting to see how the employees greet that, because I'm sure they're going to expect that produce to end up in the commissary.
Right, exactly.
So the future for you guys, obviously you're opening in December, and you will have some time before you make a product to sell, you think? How long do you think that will be?
Well, we're hoping to open our door. We'll be in December, at the end of December, and we're hoping to open our doors in March.
Okay. Meaning you'll start shipping produce, right?
Mm-hmm. That is the hope.
And so, Nona, is your job done? You've designed it and seen the construction through? What are you going to be? Are you going to still make houses, or what are you going to do?
Well, you know, both Penny and I have a lot of skin in the game here. So I don't think our jobs, either of us, will ever be done. I hope to be involved and will be involved in really the strategic operations of the greenhouse. Penny's going to be on the ground day to day and handle the operations. But, you know, it is our hope to be able in some way to learn from this project and help others to come together to this was such a community collaboration, and in a lot of ways could never be replicated and would hopefully never be replicated in what we went through done. But we really do want to grow this to other cities, not only throughout the state, but the nation and the world, hopefully. So that's the larger picture. But we obviously have to make sure that this one is thriving before we embark on that.
Yep. What about you, Penny? What's the future holding?
Well, I will be working in the greenhouse once it's up and running. So I see a lot of hard work coming my way, a lot more. But it's exciting. It will be so fun to be on the ground and working with all of our employees and our director of production to really make this thrive. And the fun thing is, too, that it is such a community project that I think that it's just going to be beyond growing and selling produce. It's going to be a lot of education and events and just different ways to understand how to allow the public in as much as possible.
I think the one thing that I've taken away from your project from a philosophical standpoint is you will expand people's view as to what's possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think of people that are environmentally or developmentally or whatever else disadvantaged, you live in the wrong place at the wrong time. These people didn't have a choice as to whether or not they were developmentally disadvantaged, but there's a human dignity associated with just being alive, and you're going to give their lives purpose. And when you do that, the rest of the world should take notice that everything is possible if you have the right conditions under which to allow human dignity to show itself for what it really is.
Well, I think so. You know, it's really exciting, Dixon. We started some employee training this last summer.
Yep.
And I can't tell you how much fun we all had coming together. We've been lucky to have some great educators fall into our lap and just teaching people and even ourselves about what's possible from, everybody's lens, right?
Sure.
It's really been great.
How many people will be working in your vertical farm?
Well, at first we were trying to wrangle that and try to understand exactly, how many employees we could hire. And then we've come to realize that because it is the system of what is called customized employment, because we have so many skill sets. I mean, I think most workplaces are like that anyway, but it's a little more apparent for us that different people will be able to work a different number of hours a week in different jobs. So we've tried to break it down into the number of hours per week that we think will be available for employees in the greenhouse.
But to answer your question, we have about 20 trainees right now.
Oh, great.
I'd like to elaborate a little bit on this aspect of the project. It is so important, I think. And maybe what makes Vertical Harvest unique a little bit, there are a lot of greenhouses that are employing people with developmental disabilities. Arthur and Friends was a great model for us, and Wendy Blanchard, the director of that, really helped us through setting our employment up. But what we really started to understand, and I think the country is starting to understand, is that these people want to work, right? That work is really vital to their self-empowerment and independence. And states are understanding that they want this segment of population to work as well. So Wyoming's been, I think, a leader in what Penny mentioned, customized employment and employment first. And Governor Matt Mead has really push the importance of that, and I think that Vertical Harvest will be a model of that. Nice. We're not a sheltered workshop where we really are trying to teach transferable skills mm-hmm. on a day-to-day on a day-to-day basis, and that we hope that every business in Jackson will see the value of hiring people with developmental disabilities. Great. And that, you know, this will be as much training as it is employment. And it will be a fully integrated workplace. So we'll have people working side by side with developmental disabilities and those without. And I think that's an important model right now in the world of DD to be setting forward. And we hope that this is really successful in that way. I think, you know, a lot of the times we banged our head against the wall saying, why wasn't this a nonprofit? Why didn't we set this up as a nonprofit? And it's important to see that it's not a charity. This is employment. Yeah. And this kind of business can succeed. So. Absolutely.
Well, it's going to be great to see this happen. That's all I can tell you. I'm going to be out there for various other reasons, and I can guarantee you, you're going to see my face.
We can't wait. It's
How did you guys run into Dixon? Let me hear that story. How did you?
Saul Silverstein.
Oh, Silverstein hooked you up, yeah.
Saul.
And you had already been working on this concept, right? You had the idea, and so you must have spoken with Saul about it, and you said, "Oh, I know this guy. You should talk to
this crazy guy that sits next to me here."
Well, it was funny because, you know, when Saul first called me, he had been skiing out here, and he said, you know, we were looking to build a house, and we heard you're great, and so, and then he called me, and his wife Cheryl had been involved in a skiing accident, so he's like, okay, everything's off, we're not coming over to see you, you know, I'll get back in touch when I can. And when he got back, and I think that we hadn't been working on it the first time he called, but by the time he called back, Penny and I had been discussing it, and of course we had been, you know, the first thing we did when we said, could we go vertical, we Googled, as one always does, vertical greenhouses, and obviously, Dixon, you were all over it, even way back then, so I knew exactly who you were, and it was funny, Saul's like, tell me what you are doing around town, and I said, well, we had this crazy idea about this vertical greenhouse, and he said, well, it's interesting you say that.
Yeah, cool, that's great. Yeah, I saw that happening here.
It's how you find out who your friends are, actually. He might have told you I was crazy, but at least he told you it was a good idea. And I don't take actual credit for the idea. I keep saying this time and time again. This idea arose in a classroom, and it was a result of a group brainstorming activity. And, you know, Vincent is waving his hand away like this, but he's wrong. It would have never happened if that mix of people hadn't been together to begin with. So, you know, you really have to pass it back to the people responsible for triggering your idea. And I'm sure that, you know, there's nothing new under the sun anyway. It's just a reiteration of some things in a different way. Yeah. But the time was right and the climate was right. And son of a gun, if it hasn't been happening now, so... You're part of a big movement, and I know you know that, so I'm really surprised and glad and a wonderful association here.
Well, it is thrilling to see everything popping up, you know, I mean, and to be a part of it. I think Penny and I really know how lucky we are that we've gotten so much support from the state, from the town. No, I mean, we earned it. If you've ever been through 6 years of a public process, you know we earned it.
That's right.
And really, you know, but it's interesting when you're going through a new movement like this where your critics are just as important as your supporters.
No question.
because they do make you question, and they do make sure you make you check, you know, once, twice, and three times to make that you're doing things the right way.
Another friend of mine, Jen Nelken, who is one of the principals over at Gotham Greens, described her story when she first wanted to build these rooftop gardens, as they're called now, are greenhouses, high-tech greenhouses, and she's got one on the top of a Whole Foods, and we're going to get to her, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks, maybe in a month. And she took 2 years to get the permits to just decide to do this, and one of the agencies kept losing her application. So she walked over there one day, she said, and she said, "Show me the application." They gave her the application. She sat down, she filled it out, and she says, "Here it is." Now, I have a witness to the effect that you can't lose this because I just handed it to you. "Oh, no, we'll be fine now." You know, and she finally did that, but how many hoops did she have to jump through before she got permission? Mm. So it's the same. I mean, you're really breaking ground here that other people will thank you for, and they won't have to go through the same pain and frustration that you had to do. And you're doing twice the amount of work that should have been necessary to get this started, right?
That's for sure.
Yeah, at least.
But it's been great. I mean, really, honestly, I think Penny and I talk about this. A friend asked us, you know, once, if knowing what you know now, I think I can speak for Penny, I'm not sure. But knowing what you know now, would you do it again? And I mean, for me, right, yes, was I didn't even have to think.
That's great.
Really would. So,
well, guys, thanks so much. We've been speaking with the two co-founders of Vertical Harvest in Jackson, Wyoming. Penny McBride, thanks so much, Penny.
Thank you.
And Nona Yahia, thank you.
Well, thank you both for all that you do for the movement and for keeping this podcast going.
Yeah.
All these podcasts, Urban Agriculture, can be found at iTunes and also at urbanag.ws. And if you have questions or comments, please send them to urbanag@urbanag.ws. Dixon DePommier is at urbanag.ws and verticalfarm.com. Thank you, Dixon.
You're welcome, Vincent.
And I'm Vincent Racaniello. You can find me at virology.ws. The music you hear on Urban Ag is performed by John Harrison with the Wichita State University Chamber Players and also Ronald Jenkins. You can find his work at ronaldjenkins.com. You've been listening to Urban Agriculture. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back soon. See you upstairs
at the Vertical Farm.